Welcome to Drone's Garage. I'm Jacob Orchard, and today with me I have Eric Peterson, and he's a Microsoftie who is involved heavily with a lot of pilot stuff, right? And so
yeah.
I'll let you introduce yourself, talk about that, and then we're going to get into some things everybody should know, whether you're flying drones or regular airplanes, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. You know, whether drones or drones, airplanes, commercial or recreational. Try to cover it all.
Yeah.
My name is Eric Peterson, and I'm a private pilot. I also have my remote pilot certificate, the Part 107, which has just recently was recently brought forward by the FAA last August. I was a day zero.
Remote pilot. I'm studying to take my test, right?
My goal right now
is to just do it in the next couple of weeks.
I'll point you to some resources.
Good.
We can help out there. I also admin a group. We're the original FAA Part 107 and Section 333.
Okay.
Where we have FAA resources. We have a lot of well-known commercial operators in there, Vic Moss, Jonathan Ruprecht, and those guys are pretty helpful in our group to get remote pilots going in the commercial space.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. So today we're gonna walk through you sent me an outline and I said let's just talk through it on the show.
We'll
go through stuff and it's gonna be interesting for a lot of people that are interested in sort of getting their remote pilot, knowing what they need to do and some things just about flying in general. And so we're gonna talk about places where you could fly, we're gonna talk about airspace in general, and then you know, registration and some other stuff that go along the way. So let's talk about where to fly. You have a bunch of you had a bunch of bullets here, like
there's really some there's a lot of places that you're not really supposed to fly. One of those, like being gasworks.
Yeah.
So it's not just because of drones. Back in the 1980s, Seattle put in a an ordinance that you cannot fly a remote controlled aircraft in city parks. Redmond also has the same ordinance.
Oh, I didn't know that one.
Yes.
I knew Seattle did.
Redmond. So most of your cities have an ordinance that will not allow you to fly remote controlled aircraft. And the interesting part about that is, well, enforcement. So not many of your city police officers or county police officers are going to come and write you a ticket or infraction because you're flying in a park. They will if they've got a lot of complaints or you're being a jerk, flying over people. If you're doing something dangerous, they'll step in. So
the general rules, I mean, as far as like FAAs, you know, staying under 400 feet, not flying over people, you know, just sort of the general UAV rules that you just need to, everybody should know by, right? What I tell people is go read those rules, stay within them.
Right? Yeah.
And then for the most part, you'll be within the rules all up and not have to worry too much about it.
So the FAA has a site here that shows you that gives you those outlines. The interesting thing is for recreational, there are guidelines.
Yes.
But for commercial aspects, there is legal precedence there.
Right.
So if you're caught flying commercially and you don't have a cert, you can be fined, you know, $1,000 an incident. Now, if you are a company that's hiring somebody for commercial reasons that are, and the pilot is known not to have a certificate, that company can also be fined 10 times that. So you got to be careful.
It's pretty serious. pretty serious.
Yeah, it's pretty serious.
And so you talked in your list, you know, airports, your house, different state parks, national parks, wildlife. So do you want to go through those real quick?
Yeah, let's start with the national parks. National parks are no-no. You're not allowed to launch or land your aircraft in a national park. Now, that doesn't mean you can't stand outside the national park borders, launch your drone, go fly over and go fly over the national park, but keeping visual line of sight, because they do not control the airspace.
Right.
So once you launched, you are now an aircraft in FAA's eyes. So, and you know, you can fly over your neighbors too, perfectly fine. There was a myth about the 80-foot rule. Realistically, and I'm not a lawyer. let's put that out there right now. But there is a myth that there is an 80-foot rule that you own the airspace 80 feet over, and it's just usable space is how it's enforced.
Okay.
The other thing is, you know, one thing we would like to see the government step in and do is some enforcement on folks that are also being bad actors against drones. So, drone slayer. Title 18, Section 32. If the FAA recognizes our drones as aircraft, they also have to be protected as aircraft.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Okay.
So, and 18 Section 32 says that you're not supposed to shoot aircraft down.
Ah.
And that comes...
It's just, there's all this gray area right now in this whole space where people are like, there's a whole bunch of people on the side of anti-drone, and there's a whole bunch of people on pro-drone, and then you see all these things on the internet back and forth of people just arguing about this stuff. And so...
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of it will actually be establishing precedents moving forward. So like the Taylor... the Taylor verdict.
Right, yeah. So,
let's
bring people up to speed on what the Taylor incident is. So
it's the Taylor verdict. Taylor case against the FAA. So as recreational pilots, you were supposed to have registered yourself, not your drone, yourself, as a remote pilot, as a recreational remote pilot. The Taylor Act, it's the Taylor verdict. The case was about it followed the FAA deciding whether to use Section 336 of their rules or Section 101, which is basically a copy of 336 with some twisted wording. And so that's what they got tossed out. In my links that I sent to you earlier, we'll put links in the show notes.
and some other stuff, because a lot of stuff is confusing.
There's Jonathan put up a wall of text about the ruling, and so you can go read that yourself. We won't talk too much about it here, but essentially, early July, you no longer need to register yourself as a drone pilot.
Right. So before then, what you do, and I had done this, and a bunch of us had done this, is gone, you go to the FAA, and you're a hobbyist, you register, you pay the $5, they give you a registration number for you, not for your drones, and you use that registration number on all of your drones that you fly for recreational purposes. Now, if you were flying commercially, you had to register each of those drones separately as a commercial asset.
You used to have to get an N number for them. My early drones, I got an N number.
N number, which is the same for if you don't know, it's the same as what you'd get for a regular full-size aircraft. So that Taylor verdict basically eliminated the need for the FAA. After the verdict, the FAA came back and said, okay, we're going to take that registration away.
Exactly. Not just that is... there is a section here where they will also talk to you about getting a refund of your $5.
Oh.
I'm going to have to go get a refund of my $5.
So this will be another link I'll need to provide to you, but it wasn't in my original list, but okay. This allows you to delete yourself from that registration database.
Wow. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. Lots of fun.
Lots of fun.
So that covered that kind of covered the national piece in your home.
Yeah. Yeah. So locally, I mean, admittedly, I fly my little tiny baby hawk around the outside of my house and stuff, and my neighbors haven't complained about it. So
more than a half a pound?
No, that thing's really small. So it's kind of why I'm like, this one's great for outside my house because it's so light and so small.
Yeah.
It doesn't really fall underneath these rules. But I mean, if you were going to fly a bigger quad, so what things would I want to be concerned about?
So now that you're in a larger space, you want to be concerned about airspace.
And here's the very confusing map of airspace if you've never seen one before.
So I've given you a sectional here. We're wrapped around Seattle, Boeing Field in Renton. And the key thing is look for dotted or the solid lines.
Okay.
And then look for anything here that says surface. And then anytime you see the dotted lines here or here, because they're a different class airspace, when you see those dotted lines, that means that airspace is to the surface. It's for recreational, for your class, these are class Delta or class D airspaces.
Right.
For E, D, and C airspaces, you want to contact the tower if there's one available.
Right.
Because like Renton and further north, Payne, after dark, they shut the towers down.
Right.
But SeaTac, of course, is 24/7, and Boeing Field is actually 24/7, if I recall correctly. And I should be able to see that on... on the sectional. But then over here, Port Orchard, you'll see that it's got a magenta dotted line. That's class Echo or class E airspace.
Okay.
Anywhere in this dotted, that's to the surface. Contact the airport managers. So if you can't contact the tower, you contact the airport manager and say, hey, I'm going to be flying. This is where I'll be. Cool thing about SkyVector is say, I'm going to be like right here. I right click on that and I say plan. Maybe I should create a separate video for this for use with SkyVector. But this tool, what it allows you to do is it allows you to put a point and then you would say a distance from the closest, what's called nav aid. So for this one, the closest nav aid would be SeaTac's nav aid.
Okay.
And so it would get a distance that you could use when you contact the airport that says, hey, I'm going to be off of this radial, and that's this radial here. And SkyVector gives you those coordinates, and it'll give you the distance.
Okay.
I'll be on this radial out this far.
And it's useful in the conversation when you talk to the airport manager
or
you talk to the tower, because they need to know exactly where you're going to be.
Right. Exactly.
Right. And so this aids you in sort of making sure you're giving them that information that it's in a form that they can consume, and then they know exactly where you're at.
Exactly.
Versus you're calling them like, well, I'm standing here and
yes.
I'm down by the water just outside of Allen, right? Or whatever. And you don't quite know. Right. And I know Allen because that's where I personally grew up, and my parents live out there,
okay.
So I go out there quite a bit. And so you want to be able to understand this enough to give the tower that you're calling enough information so that they just go, otherwise they're like, I have no idea where you're talking
so,
about.
So, yeah, what they'll do is they'll also notify any incoming pilots if they're going to be flying over where you're going to be flying. They'll just say, hey, there's SUAS operations going on over here off of this radial, and just watch out. It's just like coming across a flock of geese.
Yep.
You don't want that in the pattern. When you're trying to land an airplane,
right,
you're already under enough stress.
And would you say, and it's just my experience, I've done this like once, like in an area that I was like, okay, I'm going to be questionable. So,
okay.
Most time when you call a tower, like you say, hey, I'm going to be here. This is my location, GPS location. You give them coordinates. Yeah. I'm going to be flying under the 400 feet limit, probably from this time to this time. You know, from now for like the next 30 minutes or whatever. And for the most part, the tower people are like, okay, no problem.
Thanks for
contacting. Just want to know where you're at and what you're doing. And,
yep.
And I haven't had any issues. And most of the people I've talked to that have gone through that experience haven't had any issues with that.
When you start making those calls over in this area, they're going to get a little testier.
Totally understood, right? But
they're going to say thank you for calling.
Yeah, I personally tend to avoid this area because it's a little more complicated in,
yes.
in that airspace yeah. that you go to.
They'll also they'll advise you not to fly if, say, there's something, some air show or something going on in that area, in which some cases they'll throw up what's called a temporary flight restriction,
right?
Which you'll see around Seahawk games and around Safeco Field, the soccer games,
yep.
NASCAR, etc. You know, so any of these venues that carry more than 30,000 people, they'll throw up a TFR, a temporary flight restriction, and in that area that they've defined, it's a big no-no to fly, even manned aircraft.
Yeah, and you see those. The guy I used to carpool with is a pilot. And,
oh, neat.
And we used to talk about this stuff all the time when we carpooled to work. And you see those happen. The flight restrictions pop up all the time for all sorts of events that go on.
Yeah, there's a bunch of it. Also fires. So if they're bringing in aerial fire support.
Okay.
Definitely don't fly around there.
And that's an interesting one because there's a bunch of people that want to get involved in, hey, I want to go film with my Mavic or my Phantom these fires, but it's actually not necessarily the smartest thing to go do.
Unless you're part of the operation, don't do it.
Yeah, it's
do
just,
not do it.
Even as a hobbyist, it's a risky thing to be doing.
You're risking lives.
Yeah.
Because you're risking the firefighters' lives at that point because they might not be able to get the fire suppression down. To help them make their way, fire suppression to save a house. What if you had a brush fire around your house and firefighters weren't able to get to it? You'd want somebody's butt.
Yeah. So we talked about a little bit about places to fly.
This is kind of cool. There's no TFRs that I can spot in the.
Anything else about the airspace that we should know right off the bat? I mean, these charts are confusing.
Yeah.
If you've never seen one of these before, they could be very confusing.
Once you start digging into them, the language is easy. It's just like another computer language.
Yeah.
They're very easy to read. You can just look at a section and go, okay, I'm going to be at this altitude here, and here, or I can right click here and I can get the phone number for an airport.
Yeah.
For the airport.
And the FAA has tried and other third-party people have tried to make this easier with like the before you fly app and stuff like that. But to me, I was like, okay, there's nothing better than actually just learning to read the charts because the charts are important. So I would encourage people. Those apps are great and they help you with stuff, but learn to read the charts because it's interesting to understand. Like, especially if you may do UAVs and you may get involved, but then later on you may get wanting to get your private pilot's license. And in that case, you're going to want to know these charts even more after that.
Yeah, so. Exactly. And so I use an app called ForeFlight for my commercial or when I'm flying a manned aircraft. And, oh, hello. Let's go later, please. And so I tie it with a GPS,
right.
And it tells me where I'm at on the map, and it tracks it nicely for me, makes it really easy. And it will also, if I've got my data with me and I'm below 5,000 feet, it will also pick up more current weather data as well. The new ADS-B requirements for 2020 for manned aircraft, you'll actually get that weather data from the base stations.
And then you brought, so you have a tablet where you do GPS, and you brought this radio.
Tell
us a little bit about the radio.
So this is a Yaesel 550L. It's got the lithium battery. This is a air-to-air radio. So it allows me to communicate. So if I'm in my manned aircraft and my radio goes down, which has happened a couple times, I can crack this open and I can talk to the airspace or tower, the controller, ground, whoever I need to chat with. When I'm out flying my drone, I just pop this in. I just set the frequencies to, if I'm near an airport, I'll just enter the frequency for the airspace,
which for people to know is another thing that's on the charts.
Yes, you can find it on the charts. You can find it on. You can find it on ForeFlight. You can find it on most of your charting apps.
Yeah.
We can pop open the Bremerton here, and as you can see here, I can get the weather. This gives me air traffic control, a center, and then CTEF. This is the common frequency that I would dial in if I'm flying I'm flying my drone somewhere around it. I can monitor takeoffs, landings, pattern.
And it's interesting. If you're interested in that sort of stuff, to even if you don't have a two-way radio, you can buy it. There's versions of those that are just scanners, right? That listen.
Yeah, you can monitor, but it's really good to have the broadcast ability.
Yeah.
In the emergency, if you have a flyaway and you're near an airport, guess what you want to do? You want to talk to the tower
right
and just
away.
Say, there is a UAV on its way. It's headed this way and I don't have control.
Yeah, which is interesting because right before we started filming, we were talking about, and we went back and forth on some email earlier today. There's some GPS issues going on locally here where there's people that have had their phantoms and stuff fly away as a result of
So maybe not their phantoms, but this was a manned aircraft. This was a manned aircraft scenario that was told to us on the FAT PNW or Flights Across the Pacific Northwest page, and it's by design. These are GPS interruptions by design by Fleet Command right now. And so what they're doing is they're interrupting GPS. And so one of my friends has this track. He's coming down here and he wants to come in here. And then all of a sudden he finds himself in Eatonville.
Yeah, so it's a GPS.
641 knots. A Cessna 172 doesn't do 641 knots. And that was due to the GPS interruption. So you can see right here. Once again, this is a Cessna 172. Right. Max speed is 160 knots or else the wings are coming off. 641 knots. So you can see, then all of a sudden he's somewhere else.
Yeah. And so, and they do this on purpose.
Yes.
Right. And is there any known, do they publish when they're going to do this? That was
yes,
a question.
Yes, they do.
Because that's another important thing, because if you're flying unmanned aircraft and they rely on GPS to determine where they're at and so on and so forth, it's another interesting aspect to know. Like, hey, they're going to do this interruption. You may not want to plan your event around this interruption.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the things that manned pilots do when they're flying longer distances is they file what's called a flight plan, or they'll get a briefing for the area. And it's actually, it's a really good idea to do a briefing anyway. And as a Part 107 pilot, even a recreational pilot, you can do the same thing. And so what you do is you call 1-800-WX-BRIEF, and you say you want to talk to a briefer, and then you just say where you're going to fly, how long you're going to be flying, what your waypoints are, and they'll give you a briefing for those areas. And one of the things that they'll do is they'll tell you about, it's called a NOTAM. So this is a NOTAM that talks about GPS interference testing. And all times are in Zulu, so you can also get these on the FAA website. But what this does is it says, hey, these are the dates, these are the times that we're going to be interfering GPS.
Interesting. I didn't even know they did this. So
well,
that was
here's the area. This is the Puget Sound area. 73 nautical mile radius at 50 feet is the interruption. So if you're flying a drone above 50 feet and you're not on ADI, guess what? You've got a chance for a flyaway because GPS is just going to go nuts.
And that was you brought that up earlier today when we were chatting over email, and I was like, that's interesting. I didn't even know it was happening, and so that's...
Yeah.
It was good news for me. Like, hey, maybe I should pay attention to that stuff. Okay, last thing. There's what's up with this Feinstein stuff? Like, there's a very interesting...
Gosh.
I think it's the last topic. We'll talk about this real quick and let people know.
This is supposed to be a nationwide bill that allows localities to define airspace for... to define the lower airspace. Now, there's little no chance that this is going through, but stranger things have happened in recent political history.
Right.
So what this does is it takes away the ability for the FAA to control the airspace and do what they...
Yeah, so in a sense, what they're proposing is a new bill that says, hey, local localities will be able to control the airspace from the ground to so many feet,
yep.
And then the FAA will control from that location to forever, the infinite. And so if that passes, then it'll change this whole dynamic of what it means to fly your drone, fly anything, basically. And so there's a heated debates going on on both sides of this, of how this gets controlled. But it's just another thing that happens.
It's kind of bad for Amazon and UPS.
Right.
Any of those that want to do some drone delivery business.
Drone delivery would be highly impacted by this, this bill based on that, because they can't. They would have to deal with every local jurisdiction to get approval versus just going to the FAA to work on their approvals.
Right? So because you saw the charts, right?
Yeah.
Imagine what the charts would look like if this bill passes, right?
Yeah.
Because you're going to have something local similar to that sectional, and you'll need one for each locale you're going to. So, and local cities and counties are popping up their own ordinances that more than likely won't stand a legal test, because it...
But I mean, it's good for people to be aware of it. Like, whether you're for it or against it, that's a debate people could talk about.
I
don't want to get into that. Like,
okay.
You could be against it or for it. That personally doesn't matter to me. Like, it's more awareness. You make your own decision on whether you want to be for or against it and how it impacts you.
Yes.
Because
a
lot of people, like, I don't fly drones. I don't care. Whatever. Okay, that's fine. Like, but you may or may not have an opinion on it one way or the other. So, great. I will put... we'll get back and forth, and
we'll get
a bunch of
links.
We'll put them in the show notes. If people are interested in hearing more from Eric and the things he has to know, well, you let us know in the comments, and we could talk more detail about other topics related to this going forward.
We can do a lot.
Awesome. It's been great having you, and fly safe.
Thanks.